good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, December 28th, 2021. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Melody, and happy National Card Playing Day. You like Crazy Eights? Hey, it's also National.
I do.
Yeah. Well, it's also National Pledge of Allegiance Day. So,
cool.
Hey, why not stand up, America, and recite the pledge on this last Tuesday of the year?
Absolutely.
And, yeah. And hey, did you know that on this day in 1732, Ben Franklin, writing under the pseudonym of Richard Saunders, began publication of Poor Richard's Almanac. It's a truth. It's true, Melody.
Hmm. Did I say it wasn't, Dave?
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely. And Pledge of Allegiance, I want to go back to that. And it's like, you know, do they even say that in schools anymore?
I believe most schools.
Most schools do?
I believe most schools still do.
Yeah, well, good. Good. I'm glad. I think there's a lot of folks in this country that don't know what it is or what the words are anymore. But I don't know. I hope that's not true. I hope that's not true. And so let's go ahead and I know what's true in gold. Little buggers today. It was higher. We had an 18.21 for the high today, but they, you know, somehow the dollar found a little bit of strength. And so it hit gold. So we're still at 18.06, but it was down $6.10 after the great open today. Same thing happened to silver. We had a 23.51 and they came in and hit it. We're at 23.10. Platinum was able to manage $4 to the upside at 986. Palladium, $24 to the upside, $2,084. The USDX today, as I mentioned, got a little bit of strength at the end of the day, up 0.08 at 96.15, with crude oil up 47 cents at 76.04. And the paper markets today continue, the Dow continues the rally anyway, up 95. 36,398. It looks like the NASDAQ is poised to underperform the S&P 500 for the first time since 2016. But the S&P was down 4,786, and the NASDAQ was down 89, 15,781. Asian markets and European markets, they were all positive except for the FTSE. And the 10-year yield, unchanged. Unchanged for the day, 1.48%. And so that's it for the paper markets. And yesterday we did talk about, let me see if I can still find this, Dave, because I kind of lost my spot as I was doing the open here on the on the market here. Let me pull it up real quick, unless you wanted to, about the retail. We talked a little bit about that yesterday, about the holiday sales, fastest pace in 17 years. Higher prices didn't seem to bother anyone. Certainly, if they wanted a product and there was a shortage on it, they just found something else to find and to buy. And we talked about the MasterCard spending pulse that tracks these kind of payments, including cash and debit cards. And so the holiday sales had risen 8.5% from a year earlier. And the results were covered from November 1st through December 24th. And, of course, it was fueled mainly by clothing and jewelry. I mentioned yesterday that it did not include automobiles. I guess not too many people buy automobiles for Christmas, but anyway.
Where's the romance in that, Melody?
I know. Just what I've always asked Annie for a new car at Christmas time. I must have been naughty because I never got one. But so anyway, that was By category, clothing rose 47%, jewelry 32%, electronics 16%. And there you have it, Dave.
There you have it, Melody. I mean, some consumers stayed home this holiday season, shifting their spending to e-commerce. Still, sales stayed strong. Steve Sadov of MasterCard, also a former CEO of Saks, said that when people feel a little bit uncomfortable, you see a little bit of pickup in online buying and a little bit of a slowdown in store performance. Now, a broader picture we'll know about next month when the National Retail Federation comes out with its combined 2-month results in mid-January. Now, analysts will also be looking at the fourth quarter financial results from different retailers that are slated to be released in February.
Well, here's my favorite report. Home prices surged again in October as the housing market continues to boom. The S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller 20-city home price index climbed 18% in October from a year earlier. Now, this gain marks a little bit of a deceleration from a 19.1% year-over-year increase in September, but was, you know, it was still in line with everybody, you know, with what everyone was expecting. All 20 cities posted double-digit annual gains, and we can pretty much guess which were the hottest markets: Phoenix, Tampa, Miami, and also the, I mean, Minneapolis and Chicago. I don't think they would. I'm surprised they got 11.5% each, you know, considering what's going on in those towns.
Some people still like cold weather.
Cold and crime must be the drawing magnet. If you like crime, there you go. So anyway, the anything else you'd like to add to that, Dave?
Well, Craig Lazara, who is managing director at S&P, noted that their previous suggestions that the strength in the housing market is being driven at least in part by a change in locational preferences as households continue reacting to what's going on all over the country, whether or not this is a longer term trend or something that will moderate in the coming year, well, we will find out soon enough. Now, last week, mortgage rates fell to 3.05% for 30-year fixed rate, 2.66% for the 15-year fixed rate. So that certainly helped to drive some of these prices. National Association of Realtors reported last week that sales of previously occupied homes rose for the third straight month in November to an annual rate of 6.5 million.
Well, you know, we've talked about this several times on the program. It doesn't get the attention that I think it deserves, which in part sometimes might be a bigger problem than what everybody, I don't think anybody really knows what's going to happen, or they'd be talking about it, because then it would be no big deal and they'd be thinking this would be a great thing for the markets. It'd be a great thing for everyone around the world who takes out loans at businesses and corporations and individuals. It would be a good thing, but you don't hear a peep, not a peep. And that's the LIBOR ending. And, Basically, the banks and regulators around the world have managed to replace the plumbing of the entire financial system. And as I mentioned, I think people know, but they're not talking about it. And it's like nobody even have noticed. I mean, as of Monday, the LIBOR, now this was the where they fixed and cheated and cheated at it also, to the tune of $300 trillion in financial contracts. $300 trillion in financial contracts, from derivatives to corporate credit lines, will effectively be dead. That's the LIBOR. LIBOR, I should say. It was
or
easily...
some people have been calling it liar.
Yeah, liar. Yeah, that's pretty much true. The easily manipulable London interbank offering rate, it was at the center of one of the biggest scandals in history, and that was back to, came to light in 2012. And, to me, at that point in time, if you have a scandal like that, and all those contracts should have been voided. Because it was on fraud. They cheated. They should have been rewritten. And, too big to fail banks racked up $9 billion in fines, which is nothing when you're looking at something that's carrying $300 trillion. What's $9 billion? That's like two pennies.
Mm-hmm.
In the scheme of things. Some traders did receive prison sentences. Those were just the scapegoats. None of the big guys went to jail. But now analysts say LIBOR has been replaced with more solid and reliable benchmarks. And here's how it works. Banks make money from lending money out at a higher interest rate than their own cost of funds. They create money out of thin air. But, hey, that's another day for another story. Another story for another day. LIBOR was supposed to be a measure of banks' cost of funds. So if a bank priced a loan at, say, 1 percentage point over LIBOR, then it knew its profit margin would be 1%. 1 percentage point. Trillions of dollars of loans and derivatives were traded based off LIBOR, which meant that if traders could legally push it up or down by even a few hundredths of a percentage point, they could make enormous sums of money.
Yeah, and because LIBOR was generated by surveying banks and asking them what their interbank lending rates were going to be for that day, it was easy for the banks to lie in the direction that would make their traders the most money. So LIBOR is now being replaced by this, well, a gamut of new products. SONIA for British pounds, TONA for the yen, CERONE for Swiss francs, U.S. dollars, the only currency that will still continue to publish an official LIBOR rate, but even that will be used only for these legacy loan products. All new loans will have to be priced off of something else, namely this long-standing but less famous benchmark called SOFR, S-O-F-R, which is published by the New York Fed. SOFR's the leading replacement here in the States. So switching over from LIBOR to the new benchmarks was a massive undertaking, as we've been talking about over the past couple of years. I mean, the world's financial markets obviously couldn't just shut down for planned maintenance and come back refreshed on, you know, the next Monday morning. Instead, this deeply embedded infrastructure needed to be replaced while it was still being used rather intensively, $300 trillion. I mean, even the Fed, though, which led the charge to end LIBOR in the U.S., ended up using the old benchmark for its pandemic Main Street lending program. In any event, Melody, LIBOR's days are numbered. It's essentially over. And we'll see where the next phase takes us. There's a lot of, sort of uncharted territory using these newer ones. We'll pay close attention to them in the coming months and be telling our listeners what we're finding.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because it was London that used to set the price of gold, and they took that away approximately about the same time that you had the scandal on the LIBOR, and now they took the LIBOR away that was originally from London.
Yes.
And so, you know, you wonder what the – there is. I don't believe there are coincidences. I think some of these big changes are being done for a future monetary system that will be equally –
corrupt.
Yeah.
Unreliable.
Yeah. and accepted globally. I don't think London is, I mean, London used to be the heart of the financial world. It no longer is, I don't think. They've had so many changes, over there with, you know, them not being part of the European Union and being on their own and so on. So something's coming. They're changing the way things work. And I asked myself, you made a comment about how they've been replacing so many of these loans. I mean, they've started maybe a year and a half ago. Some of them have been replacing the loans and so forth. And I wonder if that's not what started back in 2019, the overnight rate started going crazy. And the Fed had to go in there and, you know, start pumping, you know, billions and trillions of dollars into the overnight funds. So I don't know if there's a...
Entirely possible.
Yeah. So my question then is, I can't imagine that $300 trillion have been replaced, loans that have been replaced. So it would be interesting to see if there are any impacts. There should be, you'd think. But, hey, they found out there was this, you know, the scandal in 2012 where they were just making up rates and lying about them, and it didn't seem to make any difference at all. So, again, the powers to be have a lot of power to take and to accumulate more power and more wealth. And, you know, we talk about inflation. What do us stewards get? We get more inflation. We get higher grocery bills. We get to pay for it all. Thank you very much. We don't even get a thank you for from these people. And again, supermarket prices will begin to increase come January. Comments, predictions anywhere from 2% to 20%. You know, things like pasta, condiments, soups, cookies, produce, dairy products, and meats. We've already seen a huge increase on these products already. We've had a 6.8% inflation rate as of November. This is the highest rate of increase in 39 years. And the more I listen to all of these analysts and so forth, none of them are expecting it to slow down. Inflation is not going to go away. And we can talk a little bit more about this when we come back from break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody working on client orders the rest of the program. You can call her at 1-800-375-4188. And of course, don't forget to look us up on the web at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Now, let's just put a little bit of closure on what Melody was talking about right before the break about grocery bills going up again, the fresh wave of supermarkets announcing coming price hikes in the next couple of days, ranging anywhere from 2% to 20%. That is a discouraging but not surprising bit of news. The average price increase on Kraft Heinz products will be a reported 5%, adding that some products like Grey Poupon mustard will increase as much as 13%. And then, of course, there's Mondelez International, which makes Oreo cookies and Ritz crackers, also going up 6 to 7% in January, something that retailers like these food companies hate to pass on to customers, but feel they have no choice but to do so after the ongoing supply chain challenges. Now, some are asking right now, how long will it be until President Biden has to grapple with a North Korea crisis? Now, dictator Kim Jong-un has remained pretty quiet during the Biden presidency so far, keeping threats and missile testing well below the fire and fury level, as some called it, of the early Trump administration. But thing to remember, a quieter North Korea isn't necessarily a less dangerous one. Now, some foreign policy folks are saying Kim could force his way onto the Biden agenda in 2022 through a major provocation or a charm offensive or a combination of the two, particularly with the South Korean election, presidential election in March, getting closer and closer. Now, Biden administration officials say they've proposed talks with the North, but so far the North is not engaging. Now, we know that they did conduct missile tests in 2021, but not on a level that had been ringing these global alarm bells. So we'll certainly stay on top of this and see what's going to go on, particularly as talks of a North Korean food crisis continue. Now, let's see what else is going on. Well, you know what? Let's do Levity is Golden, our weekly special. Today's topic is essentially another tale of caution, particularly for investors. Now, the owner of a Miami-based payday loan company has bilked hundreds of investors out of millions of dollars and repaid others with money he acquired from a Ponzi scheme, at least according to federal regulators and some newspapers. They're saying about 500 investors, many of them from South Florida's Venezuelan-American community, were taken by Efren Betancourt Jr.'s sales pitch of high interest returns on their investments in his short-term loan operation, Sky Group USA. It's according to the Miami Herald. The SEC filed a lawsuit against Betancourt and his company, accusing him of committing securities violations in a scheme that they describe as affinity fraud. In addition to the SEC complaint, a half dozen other lawsuits and arbitration cases have been filed against Betancourt. According to the newspaper, he has not been criminally charged. Betancourt spent a portion of the $66 million raised from promissory notes on a lavish lifestyle that included a Miami waterfront condo and a wedding to his fourth wife in Monaco, according to the SEC complaint. It also accuses him of transferring money to his ex-wife and friends and of using at least $19 million from a Ponzi-style scheme to make interest payments to some investors to keep them at bay. The SEC complaint says the Sky Group and Betancourt falsely told investors that the company would use investors' money solely to make payday loans and to cover the cost of such loans. They were promised annual rates of return as high as, listen to this, 120% on the notes principal. We can continue to caution investors to be wary of any investment that promises returns that are too good to be true. That is Eric Bastillo, director of the SEC's Miami regional office. Now, the SEC is seeking permanent injunctions and financial penalties against Betancourt and his company. The scheme lasted from over 4 years, from January 2016, according to the complaint. Says his payday loan business was legit and called the investors lenders who were involved in financing short-term high-interest loans, which he called business transaction. Wink, wink, everybody. That is this week's somewhat zany levity is golden. Now, a new report from the Fed shows the wealth of the 1% at $44 trillion. That's what's owned by the top 1% of the population. And the wealth of the bottom 50% at a mere $3.4 trillion gets split across half the population. Wolf Richter reports in his newsletter that the average wealth in the 1% category ticked up by $121,000. Dollars in the third quarter after skyrocketing over the prior five quarters to $34.5 million per household. In the bottom 50% category, on the other hand, the average wealth kicked up by, $6,800 to an average of $53,600 per household. About half of that so-called wealth at the bottom 50% is the value of consumer durable goods, such as cars, appliances, and so forth. Not cash, not investments, as it is with the top. I mean, even the top 2 to 9% have been largely left behind by the explosion of wealth. Now, households defined by the Census Bureau as people living at one address, whether they're a three-generation family or five roommates or a single person. And at the end of the third quarter, there were 127 million American households. Now, as we've discussed on this program, the top 1% households have been the primary beneficiaries of Fed policies, especially during the pandemic. And they've hugely benefited since the Great Recession. Now, the wealthiest benefit the most when Fed prints a lot of money, which is designed, of course, to inflate asset prices, which benefits those that hold the most assets. And that's not a secret. I mean, it's the official policy of the Fed and the desired outcome of, well, what Richter calls the wealth effect, where billionaires get more billions, while the bottom half, they get more peanuts. Now, the Fed doesn't provide separate data on the uber rich, the billionaire class, a distinct class in American society whose members are the primary beneficiaries of the Fed's monetary policies. But according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index, the top 30 billionaires in the U.S. are worth $2.23 trillion. On average, that amounts to a wealth of $74.5 billion per billionaire among the top 30 richest. Now, just 3 months ago, each of the top 30 billionaires at the time was worth on average just $69.2 billion. So, since the third quarter, the average billionaire among the top 30 anyway gained $5.3 billion in additional wealth. But again, the bottom 50% of households on average gain just $6,900 in wealth over the same period. Now, percentage increases are touted as a way to show that the growth in wealth at the bottom isn't, when in fact it's increased by only peanuts because the bottom 50% have so little, relatively speaking, in assets. And even a big percentage increase equates to nearly nothing, the bottom 50%, compared to the billionaire class. I mean, again, over the past quarter, the average wealth of the top 30 U.S. billionaires increased by 7.6%. That amounts to an increase of $5.3 billion per billionaire. That's a huge amount of money for one person. For 3 months. One quarter. Whereas the average wealth at the bottom 50% increased by 14% during the quarter, more than twice the amount percentage-wise. But, again, that amounts to only $6,900, further blowing out the wealth disparity, certainly between the bottom 50% and the billionaires. Since March 2020, the Fed has printed nearly $5 trillion and kept short-term interest rates at near zero, for the sole purpose of inflating asset prices, massively enriching the richest of asset holders. Fed has long clung to this doctrine that making the already rich vastly richer by printing money and repressing interest rates creates economic activity. According to Richter, this so-called wealth effect has produced the greatest economic injustice in history. In 1990, the wealth disparity between the average bottom 50% household and the average top 1% household was $5 million. But again, by 2021's third quarter, that disparity ballooned by nearly 600% to $34.4 million. That's on average. Now, while the Fed makes the uber rich uberly richer, the bottom 50% pay for it via inflation. And we see how that's been rising over this past year. Some would say that the Fed's policies, in fact, are designed to create asset price inflation. And so there you have it. Asset holders get richer. That's the purpose. The more they have, the more they gain from this asset price inflation. The bottom 50% have nearly nothing in terms of assets. They held on average only $4,100 in stocks per household in the third quarter. Talk about getting shafted. Of course, that's been the case for decades, but during the pandemic, the Fed embarked on this historic money printing binge. And the results in terms of this ridiculous wealth disparity have become unprecedented. For the bottom 50%, this historic printing binge has now created the worst inflation in 40 years. Regardless of how much disposable income you have, make sure you insure your assets by making sure you have an adequate amount of gold and silver. Call us at 1-800-375-4188. Now, been hearing talk of the Pentagon's 2022 budget of nearly $770 billion. But the Pentagon has failed another audit. And the Department of Defense now says it's working on keeping track of all of its money. Now, Mackenzie Eaglin, who's a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute in Washington, says it took the Department of Homeland Security a decade to pass its audit, and it's a fraction of the size of the Defense Department. There's a bit out there that just because the department can't pass the audit, it doesn't know where its spending is going. But Eaglin says it does. It just doesn't do it well, you know, tracking it at what he calls an enterprise level. Since 1998, the Pentagon's budget has grown from $634 billion, that's in 2020 dollars, to over $724 billion in 2020. Add another roughly $43 billion in 2021. It's crazy. But the defense budget as a percentage of GDP has actually dropped in the same period from 5.7 to 3.5%. That's according to the Congressional Research Service. Still, 3.5% is high historically. Regardless, one example of an item found in a recent audit was a Navy warehouse that was not on the Navy's property records and that housed aircraft parts worth $126 million. That's according to the GAO. Federico Bartels at the Heritage Foundation says the financial system that you have in DOD right now is set up to control taxpayer dollars to guarantee that there's not going to be unauthorized use of it. One can doubt that for sure. Congresswoman Barbara Lee of California said, "This is the Pentagon. They're responsible for the security of the United States. If, in fact, their audit systems are outdated, if they can't do an audit and give us a picture of what they're actually spending, I kind of worry about what they're doing on the really important stuff." Well, there you have it. Clearly different opinions among differing experts and our policymakers. Just one more thing we need to keep our eyes on, ladies and gentlemen. We're heading into another break. I hope you'll stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, one more time. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Again, Melody taking care of client orders. Call her at 1-800-375-4188. Our first American Survival Newsletter of the new year will hit the streets next Monday, January 3rd? You can sign up for our free weekly newsletters and our Friday blogs at the mailbox at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Looks like U.S. and Russian officials will be holding their scheduled security talks on January 10th, at least for now, amid these escalating tensions over Ukraine, with Russia's positioning of 100,000 troops near the Ukrainian border. U.S. and European allies have warned of a potential large-scale Russian invasion early in 2022. President Biden told Vladimir Putin in a video call earlier this month that if Russia does invade Ukraine, the U.S. will impose unprecedented sanctions and provide additional weaponry to the Ukrainians. U.S. officials have also said the U.S. is prepared to send additional military aid to Ukraine, as well as increase its troop presence, capabilities, and military exercises on NATO's eastern flank. And it's those types of military exercises that Putin strongly opposes, that has led to a demand of a guarantee that NATO will not expand eastward. Biden administration officials previously said they'd consider the demands, but called them unacceptable up front. Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Rybakov echoed Russia's demand on Tuesday today, saying he hoped the January 10 talks would lead to security guarantees from the West. Biden's approach on Ukraine has been clear and consistent. Unite the alliance behind two tracks, deterrence and diplomacy. One National Security Council spokesperson said, when we sit down to talk, Russia can put its concerns on the table, and we'll put our concerns on the table with Russia's activities as well. There will be areas where we can make progress and areas where we will disagree. That's what diplomacy is all about. The spokesperson added that Russia and NATO are scheduled to meet January 12th, that broader meeting, including other European officials, Washington and Moscow, set for the next day. Russian government released a draft of a new treaty proposal with NATO that would rule out eastward expansion and all military activity in former Soviet republics. Again, as the threat of another Russian invasion of Ukraine looms over all of Europe. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has previously condemned similar demands by Russia, insisting that Moscow has no veto over whether Ukraine or any other sovereign nation joins the alliance. Senior Biden officials said that the U.S. would return to Russia with a more concrete proposal in the coming week, once it is consulted with allies. This official stressed there'd be no new agreements with Russia on European security without Europeans in the room. Wow. Not sure how that's all going to end up, but you got Russia there in Ukraine and China, just on the border of Taiwan, it could be two very, very problematic areas of the world if military conflicts there should arise. Now, many more people these days are asking, what's going on with NASDAQ? Melody mentioned at the top of the program today about its relationship with the S&P 500. Our friends Pam and Russ Martins at Wall Street on Parade are reporting that, back on Friday, December 3rd, the NASDAQ recorded 12 stocks setting new 52-week highs. Same time, there were 585 stocks setting new 52-week lows. Tells you all you need to know about the risk on, goings on at the NASDAQ. Let that sink in for a moment. There were 49 times more stocks setting 52-week lows than were reaching new 52-week highs. That's astounding. That extremely negative reading of market breadth came on a day when the NASDAQ closed down just 1.9%. Jeez, imagine what the breadth would have looked like if the percentage decline in the overall market had been, like a correction, much worse. On Monday, December 6th, just a couple days later, with the NASDAQ closing up 139 points, the new 52-week lows still swamped highs, with 137 new lows and only 53 new highs. Now, unfortunately, most investors never see headlines in their newspapers about the deterioration in the NASDAQ or other stock markets' underpinnings. What they do see on a regular basis are headlines about markets setting new highs. This has the intended effect for the Wall Street manipulators of sucking little guys in at market tops as the smart guys distribute their inflated shares to the less informed. The one thing that'll be different when this particular giant bubble pops is that Jerome Powell, unlike his predecessor Alan Greenspan, won't be able to tell Congress that nobody could have seen this market crash coming. There's now a loud chorus of Wall Street investors who are calling this the biggest bubble of all time. So, words to that effect. Just last week, you have Charlie Munger, the 97-year-old vice chair of Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, stating at an Australian investment conference that he considers this era even crazier than the dot-com era, the end of the 90s. In a Wall Street Week interview on November 12th, 83-year-old Jeremy Grantham, co-founder and investment strategist of Granthameo Van Otterloo and Company, said this is more extreme in scale and size of market cap than anything that occurred in 1929, even adjusted for the size of the economy. But in U.S. history, I would say, this is Grantham again, I would say there's a bigger buy-in this time to the idea that prices never decline and that all you have to do is buy them than there ever has been, which suggests that when the next decline comes, it will be perhaps bigger and better than anything previously in U.S. history. Now, one thing the Martins say that separates the 29 market crash from the 2008 market crash is the brazenness of the Federal Reserve, to give itself unlegislated powers to rescue the stock market and some of Wall Street's worst actors, mainly banks. After the 1929 stock market crash, the market didn't regain the highs it set in 1929 until 1954, a quarter of a century later. But after the 2008 stock market crash, the Fed, with no authority from Congress, created $29 trillion in cumulative bailouts to Mega Wall Street banks, to their New York and London trading houses, to the hedge funds, foreign banks, and foreign central banks. secretly. He didn't learn of this until a decade later. And that got the market roaring again in just a few years. Instead of reining in this hubris and abuse at the Fed, Congress passed the 2010 Dodd-Frank financial reform legislation. I hope you saw me putting reform in quotes, which granted the Fed the ability to keep the details of its bailout programs a secret for 2 years, by which time, you know, the issues that led to the bailouts become blurred in the minds of Americans. We have short memories. And as we recently learned, even when the Fed does begin to reveal its bailout secrets, mainstream media, the corporate media, may indeed censor that news from the American people. This needs to change. All right. The remaining time in today's program, let's talk a little bit of, well, we'll say common sense. We know a new year is synonymous with new beginnings, new potential, and that includes financial ones. So if you make resolutions, like many people do, particularly if you're intent on setting new financial goals you'd like to achieve in the coming year, well, here are a few pointers you can follow to make sure you're setting yourself up for success. And this is for any type of investor. Of course, our listening base is precious metal investors. That's our reason for being. But listen, Brittany Castro, who's a certified financial planner at the firm Mint, shared some of her best tips for creating financial goals you'll actually be able to keep in the new year, not just make. First, she says, avoid creating goals that are too extreme. It can be easy to feel like you need to achieve all your financial goals at the same time, you know, maxing out retirement contributions, paying off thousands of dollars in debt, limiting your discretionary spending so you can save more, and, you know, and so forth. But setting goals that are likely beyond your current reach can actually set you up to feel bad and discourage you from, you know, pursuing other goals if you don't hit those marks. She says, in short, one of the difficulties with goal setting is the all or nothing thinking. It doesn't take into consideration all the grays of life. So she says, if your goal is to save $500 a month, but you haven't started even saving $50 a month, well, don't start at $500. It's going to be hard to get there. For one thing, make sure you have whatever extra it is you're going to put aside, $50, $100, $150, or $500, and then work your way to it. Two, focus on creating progressive shifts. One way to avoid creating goals that are too extreme is to focus on ones that give you room to grow over time. You can say, I'm going to increase my savings by 1%. And every few months, I'll review my budget and increase my savings by another 1%. That's more effective than going from saving nothing to saving a much higher, particularly an unachievable number. And also keep in mind that things can change. Unannounced weddings, birthdays you've forgotten about, and of course, your Christmas shopping. Give yourself some grace and start by creating small, healthy shifts with your money. Number three, accept the fact that there will always be financial surprises that pop up. I mean, making progress on any financial goal, like paying off credit card debt, can feel great until you have to use your credit card again for an emergency and the payoff cycle starts all over again. And there's a lot of emotion when it comes to managing your money, even after you've achieved a big goal, because you may feel new pressure to maintain it. And that can be hard to do when it feels like there's always some new expense sneaking up on you. So one way to prepare for that surprise is by creating an emergency fund. It's money that's separate from your savings account that you can use solely to cover any unexpected expense. And last but not least, number four, use your budget to figure out what is most doable for you. The last and perhaps most important piece of advice for setting attainable financial goals is to be aware of your current expenses and spending habits. This allows you to create goals that are realistic given your individual circumstances. Now, you know that tracking your expenses can feel daunting, especially if you've never done it before. In fact, if you've never written out a monthly spending plan before, this could be one of your financial goals you decide to work on in 2022. The bottom line is it can feel like there's a lot of pressure to set new financial goals and actually achieve them and maintain them. It's not always easy. It can sometimes be emotional. But the payoff, the results, the outcome can be very, very worthwhile. Just another way of saying, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you have plenty of your assets in gold and silver. Call us at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver needs. Well, look, that's the end of today's program. It's all the time we have. I'll be back next week in the new year. Butch will join Melody tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. Please be safe out there, ladies and gentlemen. Bye-bye.